Welcome to Evidence Based, a new Harbinger psychology podcast. I'm your host, Cassie Stossel. On today's episode, we're talking about imposter anxiety. Our guest is Dr. Ijeoma Wogu, author of Overcoming Imposter Anxiety. Ijeoma has more than 15 years of experience working in higher education across the United States. She was the director of the Multicultural Center at Rice University in Houston and an adjunct professor at University of Houston. Ijeoma received her doctoral degree in counseling and her master's degree in college student affairs administration from the University of Georgia. She is the CEO of Everlead LLC, a leadership coaching and consulting enterprise. Ijeoma is a well-regarded speaker and has led numerous programs, conference sessions, and trainings across the nation on the topic of the imposter experience. During the 2021-22 term, she delivered keynote talks on overcoming imposter syndrome for Cornell University, Hampton University, University of California, Berkeley, and University of Michigan. Hi, Ijeoma. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Cassie. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I thought we could start off just by a simple question of what actually is imposter syndrome?
Yes, imposter syndrome. So it's a pop culture phrase, imposter syndrome, right? People understand it to be the fear of being exposed as a fraud. It comes with feelings of unbelonging. It comes with feelings of not deserving a position or a right or anything like that. It comes with, you know, feelings of unworthiness, if you will. So there are different ways to experience this thing people understand as imposter syndrome. But I move away from that term. I refer to it as imposter anxiety, just to be more explicit as to what the experience is. It's normal anxiety. It's not an anxiety disorder. And I'm moving away from the word syndrome because syndrome sort of implies some sort of diagnosable ailment, something is wrong with you, or a disorder, right? So the DSM does not recognize imposter anxiety as like an anxiety disorder. It is just normal anxiety that someone may deal with and depending on the situation they're in. If they are in a new or challenging environment where they feel the pressure to perform, imposter anxiety can certainly show up for them.
I really like that shift too, because I feel like it takes a little bit of the blame out of it. Like you said, like syndrome seems really like intense versus anxiety, which is actually what the experience you're having is.
Yeah. And it's the original phrase was imposter phenomenon. And phenomenon simply talks about a lived experience. And that's exactly what it is it's a normal experience that many of us will encounter at some point in our lives.
And would you mind talking a little bit about your own personal experience with imposter anxiety?
Oh, for sure. I consider myself an extroverted introvert, but when I get around people, I'm excitable. I'm excited. I, you know, like to talk, all of that. So I knew I wasn't a shy person, right? So I enter, like in my undergraduate, I was heavily involved as a student leader, very out there. Everyone knew me. I was just involved, right? Showing confidence, being involved on campus. And right after that, I got into my graduate program. And in that space, as a 22-year-old, it was a very different setting for me. It was a small knit group, a cohort. And we would sit in these like U-shaped seating arrangement. And we would have to engage in like critical dialogue and conversation with each other. I didn't really have that experience in a classroom setting as an undergrad. So that was very new for me. So you have folks from all across the nation who look different from me, who speak differently. They come with a wealth of knowledge. So in that space, I found myself silent in class, like 3-hour long classes, never raised my hand, was terrified to speak up. And I started thinking like, what in the world is wrong with me? Like I thought something was wrong with me, without knowing what imposter syndrome or imposter anxiety was at the time. So I felt inauthentic in that space. I felt like I couldn't raise my hand. I felt like I couldn't speak up because of the limiting beliefs I had in my mind about who I was and what I was worthy of because of the context I was in. So that really woke me up to like, wow, you usually are this like person who shows confidence, who's out there, who's talkative, but then you enter this space and it's almost as if you're just a very like introverted person, which it really doesn't have anything to do with introversion like that, right? Or should I say, being introverted doesn't necessarily mean you're going to deal with imposter anxiety, because you could be someone from, you could be extroverted, introverted, somewhere in between, and still deal with imposter anxiety. It just shows up differently for everyone walking through it. So I started asking myself, like, what is going on? And then later on started doing some research, like, oh, so this is a normal thing that people experience, and it's called imposter syndrome. So it, knowing that it was a normal encounter that people have when they enter these spaces where they feel the pressure to perform, it really helped to normalize it for me, liberate me in a way, because I knew I wasn't alone. I knew there was nothing wrong with me. And I knew that it happened to high achieving folks who have these, you know, goals and ambitions of wanting to succeed. And these doubts will show up when you're in particular context. So in learning more about this phenomenon really was empowering for me in recognizing that, you know, I wasn't alone in this experience and that there was nothing wrong with me. So that was the initial thing that kind of catalyzed this awareness of imposter anxiety for me.
Yeah. And you mentioned that this can happen to high achieving folks. Can you talk about who else might experience it and what are some ways it might show up?
Yeah. So high achieving folks for sure, because these are the people who are entering, and you'll hear me say this often, those new or challenging situations, right? Mm-hmm. If you're at home, like watching Netflix all day, you probably won't encounter imposter anxiety, right? So sometimes, you know, imposter anxiety may not feel good, but sometimes, well, a lot of times it tells me it's like a sign of success. It's like you're doing something in your life that's stretching you. So therefore, it's like telling me that you're on your way to something great. So if you don't have imposter anxiety, sometimes it tells me, huh, are you challenging yourself enough in life? So I think about those things as well. I think about people in school, whether you're in college, in graduate school, pursuing your doctoral degree, you certainly can experience it in these sort of competitive spaces where you're expected to show some sort of intellect, or in a workspace where you're starting off at a job and you don't want to come across as like someone they hired and it was a mistake. So you want to prove yourself. So it happens in the workplace as well, or you got promoted and you want to show that you're an awesome leader, that you deserve to be in that space. It could show up in all aspects of life as a mother, you know, it's kind of interwoven with mom guilt. Sometimes you feel guilty for not being around your kids enough. And then you start thinking, well, I don't deserve to be a mom, or I'm an imposter, or I don't know what I'm doing. So it could show up in different spaces at home, work, school, even in friendships. You may have some imposter feelings about your personality and how you interact with others in a space. So you may feel like, okay, I'm not as cool as they are, so I might shrink back. So imposter anxiety can certainly show up for all sorts of people at different points in your life. It's not restricted to just 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds, 40-year-olds. It could be at any point in your life.
Yeah, this is so relatable. I feel like over my life, I've also experienced a lot of bouts of this, like going in to get my MFA, suddenly I feel like I'm not a writer, right? Like, or even doing this podcast, I'm like, I'm not a host. Like, this isn't something that I'm great at. So no, I really appreciate you shedding light on this, because I think it's really relatable.
Yeah. And it's just, I love hearing people share about their feelings or their self-doubts, because it absolutely tells me that they are supposed to be in those spaces because they care. And if you're having these feelings, that to me tells me that you care. You care about what you're doing and you're awesome at it. But sometimes these thoughts cloud our full perception of what the facts are.
Yeah. Yeah. And what is the impact that imposter anxiety can have on your health?
Yeah. On your health. Like if it's prolonged, like a little bit of stress can be good in a way to get you going, to keep you agile in a way, but too much of it and for extended periods of time can lead to these headaches that we don't like, you know, these pressure headaches and issues with like hypertension or insomnia, just the typical things that may happen for someone dealing with anxiety, although it's not an anxiety disorder, but I'm talking about prolonged, unaddressed imposter anxiety that, you know, happens when you're in these spaces for too long, like toxic spaces that don't empower you. Instead, they imposterize you, or you haven't done the work to really unpack and unlearn some of the perceptions that are guiding your actions. So when you don't do the work and then you remain in these toxic or even abusive spaces, this prolonged imposter anxiety can certainly start impacting your health.
Mm-hmm. And one thing you talk about in your book is self-sabotaging behaviors. Yeah. I'm wondering if you can speak a little more to that.
Yes. So self-sabotaging behaviors, I talk about four of them. The first is pushback. The second is escape. The third is to shut down. And the fourth is people-pleasing. Okay. So pushback is what you know as the fight reaction to fear. You might start overworking yourself, trying to perfect a presentation or a talk, and just burn yourself out, spend too much time on something when you are already excellent at it, but you make the mistake of striving for perfection, which often leaves us just chasing our tail round and round. So that's an example of pushback. Pushback could also be that you might react with some sort of hostility because you are sensing that maybe someone is questioning your significance or your competence or your likability. And you're like, oh my gosh, I can't be exposed as a fraud. So I need to push back, be hostile, fight against it and tell them, you know, tell them off or tell them something about themselves. So you don't have that inner peace to know or be confident in who you are, but you are in fight mode, ready to defend yourself. So that's a pushback reaction to the fear of being exposed as a fraud. The other one I spoke about is escape, being in escape mode. So that's what you know as flee, or you run away from a situation. For example, I talk about my 3-hour-long classes in graduate school. Maybe I might show up later to avoid certain conversations in class and maybe show up for only 2 hours of class because I want to miss a certain segment of class, right? That would require me to elevate my voice or speak up, right? Or you might even not just come later, you might leave early at an event if you know something is coming up, right? Or you just might avoid applying for a job because you don't think you have all the qualifications, or you're just making excuses, or, you know, operating with these self-limiting beliefs instead of trying for something that you really want. So that is when you are in escape mode. These are self-sabotaging behaviors. And then you have shutdown mode, which is like freezing. You disengage. You're at a standstill because you're afraid that if you make a move, it might be the wrong one. So you're just at a standstill. You don't move. So that's when procrastination may come in. And then you have people pleasing. So people pleasing involves like putting other people's needs before your own so that you could remain in their good graces. You may downplay yourself and deflate yourself while inflating and flattering other people. You might code switch or switch the way you speak around certain people to be accepted. So these are just some examples of some self-sabotaging behaviors, but in those four categories is how you can think of them.
The one where you're talking about coming late to class or, you know, I think that's also really relatable, like canceling a meeting that, you know, you'll still have to like reschedule at some point. Like
at some point. Yeah. So that is
like, why am I doing this to myself? Yeah. So I want to ask about how do toxic settings, including systems, practices, policies, cultures, contribute to imposterization?
Yes. So imposterization, here's how I can describe this experience. You may very well come into a situation feeling good, feeling confident, ready to contribute. And I talk about being imposterized, meaning in these spaces where you're coming in excited, there might be folks who hold more power than you, or who may just be on the same level as you, who are trying to maybe sabotage you or make you feel inferior so they can feel superior. So that's how it works. And imposterizing can involve like discrimination or telling you you can't do something or not promoting you or gaslighting you, if you will. Making you feel like you don't know what you're talking about, right? So you'll hear a lot of folks in marginalized identity groups speak about the different oppressions they deal with in a workplace or in any other setting. And there's tons of research that speaks to how a lot of systems and structures, practices are not inclusive, they're not equitable, all of that. So when you think of the history of the different oppressions, racism, sexism, ableism, xenophobia, name it, right? When you think of the history of it, this history is based off of a lot of desire to hold power, to maintain the power of dominating identity groups. And to maintain that power, stereotypes are created about those who are in subordinated identity groups. So these stereotypes get carried down and people will treat other people according to these stereotypes. So you can see how imposterizing others goes hand to hand with carrying over stereotypes, thoughts about how other people are, what they deserve, and treating people according to those stereotypes. That can certainly be imposterizing. So, you know, all of these stereotypes even impact how people shape rules, who gets left out, what is considered normal, what is considered acceptable. All of that can make someone who doesn't adhere or follow or fit these norms or rules, not rules, these norms or even these cultures, it can make them feel less than or start to question themselves in a space.
Yeah, and that makes sense why they would start to carry those beliefs or thoughts about themselves as well. And you mentioned earlier these negative thought patterns. Can you talk about how somebody can challenge and reframe those negative thought patterns and beliefs that contribute to this imposter anxiety?
First, you have to be able to identify, like sit with yourself. I imagine someone sitting in solitude and reflecting, okay, here's how I respond. Here's how I react in these spaces when I feel like an imposter, and pay attention to what that trigger is. I would encourage someone to write down what that trigger is and how they feel and start to unpack where that is coming from. Oftentimes, we've internalized messages that we got from childhood or earlier in our lives, and to be able to explore where does this come from and be able to point that out, call it out and say, okay, here's why what I've internalized is not true. So I would start to think of the positive truths about who you are and start dispelling these stereotypes, because stereotypes are pretty inaccurate, or any negative beliefs you may hold about yourself are likely inaccurate. So be able to dispel them with positive truths about who you are and hold on to those positive truths and discard those negative ideas and, you know, press forward with what you know to be true about yourself is the process that I would go through. So anything that is effective has to be intentional. So having that intentional time with oneself is going to be critical.
So if you're feeling not confident in certain areas, what steps can someone take to, you know, hone their knowledge, get more skills and experience in those specific areas?
Oftentimes when someone is dealing with imposter anxiety, they think they need more skills. And that's something that I coach a lot of my clients on. They think they have to get more certifications, more degrees, more experience, when they forget that they have everything they need to get started on something. And once I make that very apparent to them, they're like, oh, I got it. Okay. They start pulling from the resources they have. They start pulling from the knowledge they have. They realize that they are very resourceful and they can build as they go. They don't have to have it all figured out before they start. So that's like a symptom of imposter anxiety, where they think that they need so many things to build before they could implement. And oftentimes that's not the case.
Yeah, that's so funny. I mean, I think of that as like any hobby that I've tried over the last couple of years. I'm like, I need every piece of all this material before I can even start. And I don't even know if I like it. Like, I haven't even tried it. Yeah, and then I have like all this stuff, you know.
Yeah. That's just funny. And what's the root of that? What would you say is the root of that? Why you may feel the pressure to get all the pieces together?
I feel like it's a stalling tactic. Like, you know, like I can't start this until I have all these pieces in place. So then by default, maybe I'm never starting.
Sure. Yeah. And oftentimes that's the result that happens because of, fear. We don't want to fail, the fear of failure, because mm-hmm. of what it may look like in the eyes of other people, like, oh, you failed at that. Or you might be afraid of wasting resources, right? Mm-hmm. But one thing we know about like success is that it lives outside of our comfort zone. It involves taking risks, those healthy risks, right? Putting ourselves out there even when we feel like we're not fully prepared. So those are some of the principles that are helpful to even keep in mind when we're trying, when we find ourselves in that perfectionistic loop mm-hmm. where we want to get all the pieces together, we have to remember it's okay to take risks. It's okay to start with what you have and learn as you go and not be afraid to fail.
Did you grow up with an emotionally immature, unavailable, or selfish parent? Join Lindsay C. Gibson, author of The Self-Help Hit Adult Children of Emotionally Immature Parents, for a 6-week intensive online course. You'll learn essential skills to reclaim your true self, build emotional resilience, and nurture healthy relationships. Sign up to learn more at newharbinger.com/gibson-gift and receive a free excerpt bundle from Gibson's books. New Harbinger Online Courses, expert help for better mental health.
How can someone reframe their self-perception to focus on that progress and growth rather than the perfection in comparison with others?
Yeah, comparison is just such a bad thing because everyone is on their own journey. So I think, like we said before, it's just important to start even if you feel imperfect and recognize that you have what it takes to get started, right? And learning can happen along the way. So I think those are just like the key principles. And if, you know, you can't like live someone else's journey, that means you're further limiting yourself because you're limiting yourself to what that person can do without factoring in the great things you can do. So the comparison piece is just always such an unhelpful thing.
Yeah, such a trap because also everyone's only sharing their highlight reels and like not the progress and the process to which they got there.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
When you're experiencing this fear and self-doubt, how do you identify the presence of your ego in that?
I know my ego is at play when I feel threatened by difference. That's a way of identifying when ego is at play, right? If you notice that there's someone different from you and maybe they're even thriving, and then that makes you wonder, well, what about me? You know, it makes you feel inadequate because you see someone who's different from you, who's thriving. So you feel threatened, or you might even start to feel entitled to something versus try to take responsibility over something. So when you're entitled, you're trying to acquire privileges that may be unearned at some times in order to feel like you are important or valuable. So you may come across with that pushback energy of entitlement versus focusing on your responsibility as a leader in society, right? When you focus on responsibility, the focus is not on you per se. It's on the bigger purpose, the bigger mission, right? So ego is all about self, and that's when entitlement comes in. But if you reframe that and you focus on or focus your energies on responsibility, I think that's a better way to go to mitigate imposter anxiety.
Yeah. And speaking a little bit more about ego, how are you able to differentiate between your authentic self and the ego? And what practices or techniques do you use to check in with yourself and ensure that you're acting from that place of authenticity?
Yeah. From when I think of authenticity, you know, I think of my values, my core values that are true to me. And I ask myself here, you know, I remember my core values of, I can't even tell you what they are right now, but when I remember them and I say, am I operating according to these values, my value system? If the answer is no, then I better redo what I'm doing, right? So when I notice these uncomfortable negative feelings, it's important for me to take a pause, ask myself those questions and say, am I operating authentically according to my values? And if not, then I have to recognize that ego is at play and to focus on the bigger picture versus me, me, me. Because when I dwell in that space of me, 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 that's when imposter anxiety plays a role.
Yeah. And in your book, you use the term inner disruptor. Can you say more about who that is or what that is? And how can you demonstrate kindness and compassion toward that voice?
Yeah, I talk about inner disruptor. Some people call it that critical voice. Inner disruptor is just that voice within you, that voice of imposter anxiety that tells you you're not enough. You're too old. You're too young. You're too big. You're too small. You're not experienced. They tell you all of these self-limiting things as a way to protect you from perceived emotional or even physical harm. So that is a mechanism of our survival instinct. Like, that's just part of our human wiring. If you're a human, you will have fear, you will have your survival instincts will get triggered, and it operates by activating that inner disruptor because it senses danger or risk, right? And oftentimes it gets it confused with opportunities that can actually grow you versus like physical dangers in life. So it just mixes it all up and it tells you, stay away, stay away. So that's how our survival instincts operate. But that inner voice will tell you, like, you don't belong. You should shrink back. You should do all these things. So have compassion for it, because it's just a mechanism that's trying to keep us alive. That's trying to keep us like safe, right? Even though it's not doing it correctly. It's trying to keep us safe. So we should be compassionate towards it, understand it. And you could even talk to him and be like, look, I got this. Thank you for trying to protect me, but I'm going to move forward in achieving my goals, or I'm going to move forward in stepping out of my comfort zone. So reminding yourself that inner disruptor shows up when you are entering those new or challenging situations, and to be able to show compassion, that shows that you have control over it. If you're able to show compassion, it shows that you understand what it's trying to do, and you can actively tell it, like, I'm choosing to do otherwise. Thank you, but no thanks.
Thanks, but no thanks. I love that. So we talked about negative self-beliefs a little bit earlier too. And I think this is a big task to ask, to unlearn your own negative self-beliefs. So where can someone start? Like, what steps can they take to start this process?
Yeah, I think, like we spoke about before, is about, I'm a big advocate for reflection, to spend time by yourself. Once you notice these uncomfortable feelings you're having in a space, say, oh my gosh, I need to do something about this now. So being deliberate about setting that time aside to reflect on what's going on, to point out what these negative self-beliefs are that are holding you back. You might even need help from a counselor or a coach to be able to say, hey, here's what I'm observing. It sounds like you're having these self-limiting beliefs around A, B, and C. Once you have that support from yourself or support from a helper to point those things out, spend time in reflection to dispel whatever misconceptions you have about yourself, to lay out what those positive truths are, to view your personality, to view your values, to view your goals and your talents and your gifts as great things and great qualities about you. And those are the things that you're holding on to versus what you think you can't do. So the short answer to that is simply spend time with yourself. Intentional time to say, this is what I'm going to achieve today. I'm going to get clear, get rid of all these self-negative views, or start the process, because it's not like a one-shot thing. Start the process of unlearning this stuff that's holding me back, because I have goals to achieve. I don't have time to be locked up with my self-limiting beliefs. Intentionality.
Yeah. So important. And one part of your book I really liked was the part about delighting in your difference. Can you talk about what it means to do that, and what are some ways that someone might delight in their difference?
Yeah. Sometimes, I mean, imposter anxiety can show up when you feel outnumbered in a space. I certainly felt outnumbered in my graduate program, as like there was only one other African-American woman in the program. So it was just the two of us, right? And I felt outnumbered. I felt like I didn't really belong in that space. I felt different, right? So when you feel like you are the other, or there's not enough of people who look like you or come from similar backgrounds as you, you can certainly feel like your difference is a deficiency. It's a disadvantage, right? But it's actually the opposite. I want folks to view their difference as their superpower, as their gift, as the reason they are needed in that space, because there are not a lot of you there. So you are actually needed, right? You are needed, and to view your difference as an authority. Like, you are now the authority, not necessarily authority of others over others, but authority in your lived experience, your perspectives, to be able to show up confidently and offer that up. Because we know that when there is difference in a space and it's managed effectively, magic happens. It leads to innovation. So why not leverage that? Why not use it as like something that's incredibly positive in a space, right? So I think of social and cultural capital, which means like the assets you have, both tangible and intangible, what you know, things you've learned over time, all of that. It's kind of a broad-based definition. So some people may think they lack certain social cultural capital. You don't lack social cultural capital. You just have a different set of capital. So utilize that different set of capital you have in a space to make that space better, to make the space more, you know, the folks in the space more informed of difference. So that's what I mean by delighting in your difference, viewing it as an advantage, as a privilege, as a gift in any space you enter.
Yeah, that's so powerful. And I really hope more people hear that, because it's so true. So I really appreciate that. And I love just delight in your difference is just such a great phrase as well.
The DD. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It's really appealing to say. We talked a little bit earlier about sort of not being afraid to fail.
Yeah.
But what are some ways, you know, once we failed, how do we turn those failures into opportunities?
Yeah. Once you fail, instead of saying, oh man, I want folks to say yes. I want folks to say yes. I get to learn something that I could use as a building block. So just imagine all your failures are just serving as building blocks to keep going higher and higher, because you're giving yourself a really strong foundation of what you're learning along the way. So whatever you learn, you say, how can I leverage this? How can I use this failure as a learning opportunity to improve next time, to not make the same mistakes again, right? So failure is nothing but intel. That is all it is. You end up failing like when you give up, right? But if you don't give up and you use it as intel, the only way to go is up. So I think with this fear of failure, I think it's important for us to set our own standards instead of societal standards of who we ought to be, what we ought to achieve in life, to set our own standards based off of our own values. So we get to have different iterations of what we're achieving and our own timelines if we set our own standards, so that we're not trying to live up to some sort of other expectation. Right. So if we're challenging ourselves, we don't have to necessarily worry about those feelings of like, do I belong? Do I deserve it? Whatever. Because we get to define what we want for ourselves. So I would just say failure is intel. It's a learning opportunity, and to view it as a positive.
Yeah. And you've mentioned values a few times in our conversation. I wonder, for somebody who maybe isn't like off the bat recognizing their values, what are some ways to check in with yourself to identify those core values for yourself?
Yeah. And that's why internet is amazing, because you could simply type like, you could type in like values clarifications exercise or values clarifications list, and you'll see tons of resources that lists different values, like a bunch of them, maybe like 50. And when you look at that list of values, you can read them, and whichever resonates with you, it's likely your value. So I would place a little check mark as I go through. And then from that selection, maybe select five that truly resonate with you. And you'll see that, wow, these are my set of values. And you could reflect on why they are your values. And you can try to remember that these are your values when you do face imposter anxiety, to bring you back to this kind of sense of responsibility over yourself and for what you are called on this earth to do, to refocus your attention from being all about you and your ego and how you look in front of people to the greater purpose of why you do what you do. So values clarifications exercises are really good, and I encourage that.
Yeah, and so much of this work, it just sounds like, requires like just so much self-awareness, which is very important.
Yeah, self-awareness. You got it.
Yeah. And one other concept that I've just been fascinated about and you talk about in your book is toxic positivity. Can you talk about what that is and why do we want to avoid it?
Yeah. I'll give an example. Like, we've just been, I could give several examples, but we have, your friends may be, you know, they may say toxic positivity things to you. Like, you might express some heartache or something, like, oh girl, it's okay. Everybody deals with that. Like, you just gotta be tough. You just gotta just suck it up. Like, stop whining or whatever. They say all these things that they may think is empowering or inspiring or uplifting when it actually is not. It just shows that they're dismissing how you feel, that they don't really understand it, or that they don't care, or it makes you feel embarrassed that you even share something personal with them. You are vulnerable, and then they kind of shut it down as if your experience or your feelings are not valid. So that's what toxic positivity is. It's like hurling these words at you that make you feel like you should not have shared in the first place, right? That your negative feelings are invalid. And we have to be very mindful of that, because we think we're doing a service when we actually are doing a disservice when we speak to folks like this. And it's a lot of times it's with good intention, but it doesn't really come across that way. The best thing to say is, I hear you. I understand. You may not necessarily agree, but that's different from understanding. You could understand where they're coming from, what they're feeling is okay, because all human feelings are understandable, whether they're negative or positive, they're valid. So saying that it's okay, I understand, I hear you, offering that empathy and understanding is how to combat the toxic positivity.
Yeah, that toxic positivity feels like it goes really hand in hand with our pretty toxic hustle culture.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I hear things like team no sleep, like hustle hard. I think a lot more people are learning to move away from hustle culture. I just get it. Like, hard work can pay off, but then we also have to be self-caring, self-compassionate, take care of ourselves, and set those boundaries of respect for ourselves in order to even pursue the things that we're wanting to pursue in a healthy way. So I'm glad that shift is being made away from hustle culture. I certainly was part of that culture, but I am every day trying to unlearn those principles and ways of being.
Yeah, I think that's powerful, but you're not the only one. Like, everybody has fallen into this. I know I have. Like, it's just always like, what's next? What's next? What's next? And I think maybe like self-care is next, like actually taking care of yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Setting those boundaries with ourselves. People think boundaries are all about like you setting it for other people in terms of how they treat you, but you have to be disciplined in those self boundaries for yourself in order to not burn yourself out.
Absolutely. Ijeoma, I feel like this is a good place to wrap up unless you have any final thoughts for the listeners.
I think this is a good way to round up too. I just want folks to know that imposter anxiety is not your fault. It's not your fault. We've all been brought up in a society where we've been socialized and conditioned to believe certain things, certain ways of being, and we're spending the other half of our lives unlearning a lot of untruths and inaccuracies about who we are and what we deserve. So it is not your fault. You are not a problem. It's a normal phenomenon that happens to the best of us, right? And just know that if you experience it, you have the tools to be aware of it, to embrace the correct mindset about it, and to take action. Whatever the inner disruptor says to do, do the opposite, right? And those can be your tools, things to remember. And again, if you experience imposter anxiety, just point it out as a sign of success, that you're on your way to something that will stretch you into the person you are destined to be.
Thank you so much for this conversation. I love the reframing it into a positive thing, of a sign of success. I got a lot from reading your book. I know others will as well. So thank you so much for your time and for your work.
Thank you, Cassie. It's been a pleasure.
Despite your accomplishments, do you ever worry that you aren't good enough or capable enough? Have you reached high levels of success, yet still suspect that you're just faking it? If so, you may have imposter syndrome, the persistent, internalized, irrational fear of being exposed as a fraud, even in the face of overwhelming evidence to the contrary. You aren't alone. Too often, highly talented and successful people allow self-doubt to cloud their view of themselves. So how can you start celebrating your hard-earned success and move forward in life with confidence? In Overcoming Imposter Anxiety, imposter syndrome expert Ijeoma Wogu offers proven, effective, and culturally informed strategies grounded in cognitive behavioral therapy to help you stand up to imposter anxiety, alleviate self-doubt and the fear of failure, and live with authenticity. You'll learn to anticipate and understand the triggers that cause your imposter thoughts and discover ways to shift your mindset so you can move past the fear, honor your achievements, and focus on your goals. You'll also learn to respond to imposter thoughts and feelings, overcome your fear of failure, and affirm your competence, embrace the qualities that make you unique, build an encouraging support network, and help yourself by helping others. It's time to ditch self-limiting beliefs so you can start living life with greater courage, confidence, and authenticity. This book will help guide you step by step. Visit our website at www.newharbinger.com and use coupon code PODCAST25 to receive 25% off your entire order. New Harbinger Publications is an independent, employee-owned publisher of books on psychology, health, spirituality, and personal growth. For 50 years, our evidence-based self-help books and pioneering workbooks have helped readers make positive changes to improve mental health and well-being. Founded by psychologists Matthew McKay and Patrick Fanning, New Harbinger is proud to be an employee-owned company. Our books reflect our core values of integrity, sustainability, compassion, and trust. Written by leaders in the field and recommended by therapists worldwide, New Harbinger books are practical, accessible, and provide real tools for real change. Join the New Harbinger Clinicians Club, a free membership club exclusively for mental health professionals. Sign up today and you'll receive a special welcome gift, 35% off all professional books, free client resources, free ebooks throughout the year, access to private sales, a subscription to our Quick Tips for Therapists email program, and more. Visit newharbinger.com/clinicians-club for more information. If you enjoyed today's episode, we'd love if you rated, reviewed, and subscribed to the show, and we hope you might share it with anyone who might benefit from the content. This podcast is not a substitute for counseling with a licensed provider.